Welcome to Out to Lunch, the podcast where great chat and great food meet and we risk getting gravy down our shirts. Joining me this week is a comedian, writer and actor known for a terrible brown suit, a thick black beard and an eye-widening line in hilarious, if awkward, surreal ordinariness. In 2006, he won the Hackney Empire New Act of the Year. He went on to perform an equally awkward and brilliant comedy duo alongside Diane Morgan and has performed everywhere from the Edinburgh Festival to live at the Apollo. Alongside that, he's acted in comedies like Him and Her, Miranda and Afterlife, and he's a diehard regular on comedy TV panel shows such as 8 out of 10 Cats. It's the brilliant Joe Wilkinson.
Yeah, it's quite nice to be yourself and be honest, because everything else I do is a complete and utter lie.
Is your life an entire lie, Joe?
I feel like it is.
I mean, you don't have to treat this as lunch, just as therapy. So we're standing in Brewer Street in London, Soho, for a very good reason. We always ask our guests if they have dietaries, by which we mean, do they eat meat? Are they gluten intolerant? Do they eat dairy? That sort of thing. So we asked Joe Wilkinson for his dietaries, and he just came back and said, I'd like to eat Mexican. Oh, right. OK. That's very, very specific, Joe. Well, I have brought him to somewhere that serves very good Mexican food. It's called El Pastor. It's sort of a taqueria, but with a whole bunch of other things thrown in besides. The original Zimbarra Market, I reviewed it and loved it. And now I've come to this much bigger one that opened earlier this year. Joe Wilkinson wanted Mexican. He's bloody got Mexican. And we've got the whole of the basement to ourselves.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Nothing.
Look at this.
Have a seat.
Hi, hello.
This is Manu, who's going to serve
hello,
us.
Hello, Manu. How are you? Thank you.
Hey, fine. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Would you like to see
what's sparkling
water?
I'd love sparkling, if I may.
So would I. And we have some guacamole with some totopos, or you can call them tortilla chips. Quick first question. You have quite regularly referenced chicken Kievs
in your
comedy.
Yeah.
Can you describe for me the appeal of the chicken Kiev? Or is it just as a culinary item an item of comedy?
Well, I do love chicken Kiev, but it has a special place in my heart because when I started going out with my missus, the first meal she ever cooked me was chicken Kiev chips and peas.
Which is the meal you've referenced on a number of occasions.
Yeah. And it stuck. Well, when she told me she was making it for me, I thought she was joking. I don't know why I thought she was joking. I just thought she was being funny. And I turned up and then... we had chicken Kiev chips and peas, and we have it regularly.
Does she make it from scratch, or is it Sainsbury's Tastes the Difference
we
job?
Do. We used to be Tesco's, then it was Sainsbury's. Now it's Waitrose.
Well, that's clearly a sign, actually.
Yeah, things were
used to be Tesco's, then it was Sainsbury's, then it was Waitrose.
Yeah, yeah.
So
going the right way.
Can we plot Joe Wilkinson's successful career through the source of the chicken Kiev?
When I'm back down to Sainsbury's, I'll let you know, and then eventually back down to... It's going to go that way at some point, isn't it? Back down to Tesco's own.
And we have a menu. Are there any specials?
So, yes, we do have three specials today. We have a crab tostada, which is maybe the way the white part of the crab. We have octopus and pork tackle.
Oh,
and we have a fried chicken taco as well. Do you have any allergies in it tonight?
Any what, sorry?
Any allergies.
Penicillin.
It's unlikely to be an issue, I'm hoping.
Okay.
Unless, and, you know, the whole day goes really badly for you.
And horses.
Should we get the crab special?
I was going to say, would you like to order for me?
Do you trust me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've always wanted to say that to someone who knows.
Do you, all right. If we get the crab and the sea bass ceviche, and then do you like pork and lots of...
Oh, yeah, I'll literally anything except...
All right, the raisins. Carnitas. But could we also get the fried chicken taco?
Oh, I love this. Absolutely love this.
Brilliant.
I love it.
There you go.
Thank you. That was really exciting.
You've said once that you'll never be interviewed on camera as anything other than the... persona you're known for.
Yeah, I changed my mind on that.
Have you?
Yeah, well...
Because I was wondering who the hell I'm talking
no,
to.
No, I did that for years because I thought I had this thought that be known for one thing when I'm, you know, not acting, whatever, sort of this persona thing that I'd invented. And then I realised that people didn't give a hoot when you sort of... when you're yourself as well. And so I've done a few things recently where I've just been interviewed as myself. Oh, it's quite nice to be yourself and be honest. Because everything else I do is a complete and utter lie.
Is your life an entire lie, Joe?
I feel like it is.
I mean, you don't have to treat this as lunch, just as therapy. I went back, as I want to do. I watched some stand-up you did at Outside the Box. Now, the material, what I call the droll, the, you know, very dry, the absurd, what was striking to me about it is that while the character, the personality was there, you were dressed in what I would call normal clothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When did the, I'm going to use pejoratives here, the terrible dog shit brown suits happen? Well, and how many of them do you have?
I have one.
Jesus God.
And I've had it for, right, I'll tell you how it came about. I used to do a double act with Diane Morgan called Two Episodes of MASH. And we did a couple of Edinburgh shows. And let's say they were reviewed averagely. We had this attitude, we didn't give a shit. You know, which is you
was do. That, was that a principle, an underlying principle well, to what you did? Not was. Giving a shit?
It was. It's a way of surviving, really. But it's also, we sort of projected it. We sort of said, you know, we sort of told the audience we really didn't mind if they left or whatever. My friend Alistair saw the show and he said, he really liked it. He goes, but people believe you don't care. So the following year, we got a director in, Stefan Goloneski. He wrote Him and Her and Mum and...
He's, lots of stuff.
Yeah, he's incredible. We just got him at the right time before the world caught up with how
and
he
got expensive.
Yeah, yeah. He basically said, we need to show the audience that you care. So they won't know, but they'll go, oh, right, they've put effort in. They just, what they're saying contradicts what I see. So he basically put Diane in a sort of ball gown and he said, have you got anything smart? So I bought one suit in, because I only had one suit, and he started laughing. I put it on, and he started laughing. He said, it's amazing, where'd you get that? And I was like, Burton's, what are you on about?
And was it this, the brown suit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he said, he thought it was like a...
A comedy suit?
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, he goes, that hangs so badly on you. And I was like, does it? And he went, yeah, it's perfect. And then that year, the reviews were amazing, everyone came. And just that... sort of showing the audience that we cared sort of made all the difference. And then I carried on wearing the suit.
I don't want to kind of obsess about the suit, but I am slightly obsessed by the suit. So it's played an important part in your career now for 15 years.
Yeah, still together, still hanging
back. That's the point, because this is the information that I think listeners to our challenge want. How is the crotch holding up? Particularly that point where the legs rub.
It's threadbare. It's honestly threadbare. The shirt, I wish I'd bought the shirt. That... is in an unbelievable state. There's no armpits.
There's no armpits
no,
at all.
No armpits, and I still wear it. You know, strippers have... You know, they have a shirt which is just that bit at the front.
A bib?
Yeah, like the bib bit. And then they rip it off and you see the rest. It's a sort of... It's only slightly bigger than that without the body that deserves. Oh, God, yeah, I'm really thinking about that. It's sort of off-putting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
I'm sorry that...
You brought it up in my...
I did. But the character... who wears that shirt and that suit and that tie?
Yes.
Who is he?
My friend Charlie, I talked to about comedy a lot. He basically said, it's a man who, if he was real, wouldn't survive in the world. He'd just die somewhere, basically, because he's cursed. But he talked about the comedy of it being like observational material, like Michael McIntyre, that absolutely no one can relate to.
He's an outsider who doesn't recognise his outsider status.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
There's some food coming.
Hello. Oh, good Lord, look at that.
Brilliant.
Smashing, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Right, well, I'll go for that one.
Wait,
carefully and then wait to see it go down your front.
Oh, is that, so there's no... Yeah. I thought you were going to tell me how I would stop it.
I have nothing to tell you, Joe. Do you ever worry that the character is less framed than prison?
I think if you see the best people, you can give them a Mr. Man name. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like Rob Beckett is, you know, Mr. Working Class. Do you know what I mean? So they've got this angle. And all the best ones have, like, John's Mr. Neurotic. You know John Richardson?
Yeah.
All the best ones have an angle. And if you've got your comic angle, you can give any of these... You can give Rob Beckett, Catherine Ryan... You know, because Catherine Ryan's like, she's Miss Showbiz, you know, she's elegant, you know. So each of them, she's high status, so each of them have got their angle on any subject.
You've just been touring Britain with Catherine Ryan, haven't you?
I've just filmed a show with her.
Yeah.
It's like a silly travel show. Shouldn't know what it's called, I've just done it for 7 weeks. Well, I haven't done a lot of shows where it's just been two people for like 7-8 weeks. You suddenly go, God, if we found out we didn't actually get on, this would
be hell.
It would be absolute hell. But I loved her and I couldn't get enough.
What's the premise for the show, wasn't it?
Basically, I'm making her rough it because we're from the different ends of the spectrum, basically. So it's the angle that we all know Catherine as this 5-star, you know, Hollywood glam. And I make her go to the arse end of holidays, basically.
And did this require you to wear the suit and the shirt and the tie for day after day day?
I went more as myself and I was somewhere in the middle, I think. You know, like it was too... that the persona thing is too... you can't live it. It's pure madness if you, you know, lived and breathed. So it was a kind of...
well, that was kind of what I was asking you, where there were limitations to what it could...
yeah, well then, yeah, you're right, like... I wouldn't want to do something like this. Like it's in the framework of where it should be, like on Countdown and stuff like that, because it's sort of acting. You know, it's really acting as a different person. Whereas this, I wouldn't want to have a conversation in, because you go, well, none of this is real. The things like this work because they're real, and people are having real conversations.
The beard.
Oh yeah.
In 2011, in Him and Her...
oh, yes.
...which is sort of a comedy-drama thing...
written by Stefan Gonevsky, yep.
You got it shaved off. There is a video of you getting shaved.
Is there?
Yeah, you were in it, and you're talking to the camera.
I can't remember that.
Oh, it's probably the crystal meth days,
yeah,
Joe.
Yeah, that does ever.
You go through various phases. Half of it comes off. The first bit is Charles Manson. You've got the Charles Manson.
I remember
Manson,
now.
And then
I said
it comes off and you go...
did we do Hitler as well?
You do Hitler.
Yes,
and then it
would.
Turns out that you've got the hair perfectly to do Hitler. You hold in Hitler for quite a long while, I've got to be honest.
That's my thing.
And then you get rid of it altogether. Was it psychologically difficult?
I'd had a beard for quite a while. Yeah, it was. I remember Stefan writing it and asking me, like, if I'd do it. And, like... I'd basically do anything for Stefan because I think he's a genius. That was the first job I ever did, like acting job or anything, which was, looking back, was sort of really being thrown in the deep end. And I was talking to David about it, who my friend, and I was saying, looking back, like Richard Laxon, the director, was very clever at kind of basically telling me to do something differently because it wasn't right. And I never noticed. Like, that was his genius, because, like, Him and Her was essentially 5 characters, and that's... when you're one of the 5, that's a hell of a big...
you've got a lot to carry.
Yeah, and especially if it's your first job. But, you know, your 20th job, it's a lot. But obviously, naivety is a great thing. So I was like, oh, that's nice, I'm in a telly show. I also remember thinking I was going to get paid about £2 million, because I had no idea that telly doesn't pay £2 million. And then he was really clever, because it was all about truth. It's all about kind of just trusting that when something's truthful, it's funny. Like, it's not about making the people in the set laugh.
Right.
And I remember, like, we were just talking, because we've done a lot more stuff now and been on the other side of the camera and sort of seen how directors work with other, and I was like, oh god, yeah, he was having a nightmare with me. Like, I didn't have a clue, and he was very, very kind, the way he sort of like got me to do it better than I was doing it, and that's quite a skill.
Does it surprise you how deep into that you've got? Because there's a lot of dramas you've been in, a lot of stuff.
It wasn't planned.
You didn't want to be an actor?
No, I did stand up, and then I wanted to do some sketch stuff, which I ended up doing with Diane Morgan, who's a brilliant actor.
How did you meet Diane Morgan? Sorry.
On the circuit. We actually did a little comedy course, like 2003 in Camden, and we met there, and then we just remained friends. We had a sort of similar outlook on comedy, and then we just started doing stuff together, and she had already been an actor and acted in a few things, not a lot of stuff, not like she's now, like everyone wants her now. She was sort of, like, took people ages to realise how good she was. So by the time, we were, like, no one was interested in either of us. And so we, you know, we did Edinburgh and stuff. And she, so that, I did a bit, like, she sort of showed me the ropes, because, you know, sketch stuff is essentially acting. But that's all I'd done, really, with her, basically. And then I auditioned for Him and Her, basically. And that was it.
Do you enjoy that process?
Auditioning? No.
Not auditioning, acting. I can't imagine anybody actually enjoys
some
an audition.
Some people are brilliant at it. God knows how. It's awful. Yeah, I do like acting. Like, it's really liberating when it's someone else's stuff and you can just concentrate on your bit. It's quite stressful when it's your stuff.
But is it always reaching for you to play a version of the character that we know you for?
I think everyone sort of has a natural kind of, oh, that person does a really good. And I think that's fine. You know, that's fine. You like, I think I'm naturally, people naturally think of me as like, thank you, the odd, could be the odd guy, you know.
Right.
But like, Him and Her's character, Dan, you asked me earlier about if it's based on anyone, the persona thing I do. That isn't, but Dan was 100% based on someone I met who basically came up to me after a gig and was that person, basically. And it just really stuck with me. And then when I was asked to audition to play Dan, I kind of did that person, basically. And he was quite a big guy, but he was just waiting for the world to shit on him and tell him he was useless, basically. And that's what I did. And I hadn't done that character before or anything. It was the first time I did it. It was in that audition. And I later found out that Stefan had written me in mind for that part, even though I hadn't done that character or whatever. So it was kind of mine to lose, which I'm so glad I didn't know about, because that would have been awful. Like, but then he didn't tell me or anyone, and then I got the part, which was lucky, thank God. And then you know.
And that started another shape to your career, didn't it? It's fair to say.
Yeah, acting's really something that was. I always feel blown away when I'm doing it, like when I'm there and I'm going, bloody hell, am I an actor? Oh my God, am I shit? That's mental. Like that, I still feel very much about like that. And I don't go out my way to say I'm an actor, if I'm honest. I'm always slightly reticent to say. Like people say, oh, you know, you're an actor, and I'm less comfortable with that title than I feel more, you know, when people say, oh, you're a comedian, aren't you? I'm okay with that, but I'm less okay with that too, because I feel like, because the way I feel when I'm doing it, I'm still baffled. I'm like, bloody hell, this is madness, isn't it?
Hello, it's Ollie here. I'm the executive producer on Out to Lunch. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, one of the relationships I'm proudest of in my life is with my daughters. They're not quite the age to go for fancy lunches with celebs yet, but we do enjoy our family dinners together in relative harmony. You know, give us time, that they are still quite young. But this takes work, and it's a mistake to think that relationships have to be easy to be right. The best relationships come out of learning to live with each other and keeping our sense of humour, even when food is spilt all over the table or dinner's not to everyone's liking. It can be really tricky, but therapy can help you with those skills. You can work through parenting challenges, explore seeing eye to eye as a couple, and work through your relationship with yourself too. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's flexible, and you can switch therapists at any time, as that's a relationship that needs to be the right fit too. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/outtolunch today and get 10% off your first month.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Thank you.
So this is for the curry. This is onion, coriander, and limes.
Oh.
So the easiest way to do the taco is just put the tortilla, put a bit of the salsa especial, then carnitas, then onion, coriander, and a pinch of tomato if you want. And
wonderful, thank you.
Nice, enjoy.
Thank you.
Take a tortilla.
I was crunching a...
Crunching's fine.
I was crunching a pork scratching, but I couldn't hear what it was saying.
Okay.
I was crunching.
Well, it'd just be comedy gold. Just see what you can do then. What was the plan when you were a kid? Did you have something that you thought you were going to do? Was it always this?
No. Right. I was obsessed with comedy. Yeah.
You were?
Yeah. Me and my brother, absolutely obsessed. Like, we had a telly upstairs, little black and white telly, and that's where we watched Friday Night Live stuff that's coming back. I remember that really early on. Dangerous Brothers was like the thing. We'd watch it. All their stuff was great, but it was all about the Dangerous Brothers, Ade Edmondson and Mick Mail. When I got older, I found stand-up clubs and whatever.
First open mic?
First open mic was in Balham in South London.
Banana.
It wasn't at the Banana, but at the venue of Banana. I had a Tuesday night open spot night. I got to know the guy, Ed Balls, who sadly passed away now. I got to know him, and he used to sort of let me in for free, and I used to watch every Tuesday. And then one day he just said to me, do you want to do?
What, had you told him that you...
No, never. I didn't tell anyone I was doing stand-up for about 2 years, basically. I did it for 2 years and didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell anyone I was going to this club on a Tuesday night. I was just watching and... saw everyone basically come through there at that time.
And if anybody doesn't know, the Banana Club in Balham, whichever room it was one of the key spots in London.
Yeah, it still is, I think. It's still one of the, you know, everyone does it. So then he said, look, do you want to have a go? And I sort of, yeah. And he booked me in. It was like 6 months later. Because the thing about when you do open spots is the hardest thing is getting a gig. You can't, now if you've done a bit of stuff, you can do a gig tonight, tomorrow night, whatever, but the time, he goes, so it was like, I remember that was like maybe September, and he said January the 4th, do you? Or something like that, you know.
So the upside, the downside is that you've got to think about it.
Yeah, it was like
the upside is awful. You've got to think about it.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't happening straight away, but it was like hanging over me like a cloud. And then got to the gig, the day of the gig, and I remember walking to the gig and I just didn't want to do it. So I come out the tube and I saw the venue, my heart sunk. And I said to myself, I just wanted a way out. And I said to myself, if no one texts me from the walk to the station to there, I won't do it. I don't know why.
If you don't receive a text in those 3-4 minutes.
Yeah, I won't do it.
You won't do it.
I just won't go in. And
that's pretty magical thinking, isn't it? You would attach value to nobody paying you any attention.
I just wanted,
in a 4 minute gap.
Yeah, I wanted that, you know, it was, and we didn't text that much in those days. And I got 3/4 of the way through it. My friend Nicola Cunningham texted me some nonsense and I had to do it. Oh, I was gutted.
How do people react to you when they come across you on the street?
There's definitely a slight, not disappointment. I've had people say, you're quite normal. I remember Russell Howard, I used to support Russell Howard on tour, and he, you know, he's got millions and millions of fans, and he said, it's best if they don't meet you because you're only going to be a disappointment. You know, they see him on stage for like an hour and a half. They've been really funny, really energetic, you know, doing all these different characters and whatever, and then you meet him afterwards and he's sort of going off, you know, thank you for coming, and it doesn't care, you know, that's this bit.
I did one of those things, you know how if you Google someone's name with the word is in front of them, so is Jay Rayner, well, I've got to be honest, the first one with me is Jay Rayner married?
Right. Well, actually, in Google,
yeah.
Like...
Yeah,
like,
it will throw up all the most searched things.
Oh, God, do you do it with me?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, here we go.
Do you want to know?
I don't know, actually.
So the first one that comes up with you is Joe Wilkinson still married?
Still married. Flipping hell, that's brutal.
Isn't it?
So people type that a lot. Is that why it comes up a lot?
Yeah, that's that would be
no.
The, anyone, well, at the time when I was searching, that was the...
How do I feel about that? Oh, do you know what I felt first of all? I was like, yeah, I still am. Like I'd won or something. I'm like, I haven't won.
Yep, she hasn't got rid of me.
People that are asking, that's brutal. Wow. Do you remember the others? I'm really fascinated.
All right, well, it's actually... So you'll be happy to know. Okay.
Go on.
Looking at it here, it's Joe Wilkinson still married is actually the third search.
Oh, worse.
So the first one is Joe Wilkinson married? That might be out of, you know, curiosity.
Why are people obsessed if people are married?
Well, there are two possibilities, Joe. Either it's because they fancy you.
What's the other one then?
It's the opposite, that they can't imagine anybody would want to spend that. Yeah.
Makes a lot more sense.
Shall I go through these?
Yeah, go on.
Is Joe Wilkinson vegan? Well, I can answer that as he fills his soft tortilla.
I felt a wave of proper guilt, like, as I eat pork.
Is Joe Wilkinson related to Fabio? I have not, and I should, having done my research, know what that's about, but I don't.
I've been very lucky enough to do a Channel 4 show, Countdown.
Yes.
For... God, it's getting on 10 years. And many moons ago, I had this idea that I have this really attractive, hunky half-brother. And I brought him on, he's mute. And I go, this is my half-brother, Fabio. That was the sort of joke. I can't remember what we did exactly. And then I've used him every show. Right. Ever since. He's called Rob. He's a lovely, lovely man. He has an ability not to laugh. He's incredible. And we're friends and everything. But he is now known. He can't, you know, he goes about and he has photos with people as Fabio. He's a thing, he's an entity now. But he was just a random hunky guy. And he comes on in little pants. He's got an incredible body. You can't stand next to him for too long. Because it really does knock your confidence. That's still married. Get your head around that.
The writing process, there's two parts, I think, to what you do. Mm. There is the character, Joe Wilkinson, but you write and produce a lot of stuff yourself, don't you?
Yeah, we write. I write sitcom stuff with David Earle, who's a brilliant comedian, and the same guy I do the Chatterbox podcast with.
And you literally do it, you don't do that every morning?
Yeah, every morning, yeah. Yeah, it's pure madness. It's maddening. It's
what time?
About 8:30 every day. Yeah, it's beyond the pale of all.
How long are the episodes for anybody who hasn't listened? I have listened to a couple.
Well, they can be quite long. We can do like about an hour and a half sometimes, but then sometimes they're like 25 minutes. But I'd say sometimes we have like some people we've got like a weatherman who comes on and a few other people. But a lot of the time it's just us talking. And every time I go, I've got nothing to say. Every morning I've got nothing to say.
The slight obsession with Rob Beckett.
Oh, yeah.
There was one episode I listened to and I was actually fascinated because Rob was sitting in on Radio 2.
We're slightly obsessed with being like proper, if we could be proper... like DJs, you know, like Radio 1, Radio 2 DJs, because I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of umming in ours and huffing and sniffing. And if you took out the ums, they would be about 11 minutes long, our apps.
How long have you been doing it literally every morning?
I'd say it's about 18, 19 months. Like we did a sitcom last year called The Copfields, and I was playing one of the leads, and David was hugely involved with the direction side, and he wasn't directing. Simon Hind is brilliant, but he was advising, so he was sort of producing it, and we did it every day through that process, which I look back, which was madness, because we were doing it at about 5:30 in the morning, and then going on set, doing a full day's like filming, and then we're doing it, and I was looking back and going, why did we do that? Why didn't we just have 6 weeks off? That was insane. In the middle of our own sitcom, we decided we'd just carry on doing it. And then, that's when we thought, well, if we go on holiday or something, let's not do it. So
now you're allowing yourself breaks?
Yeah, but
which
it's
you have
rare.
To signpost for your legion of loyal listeners.
Our chatter biscuits, as we call them. They're, oh God, so embarrassed by the name of our podcast. It's so embarrassing. We chose the name of the podcast on the first day of doing it. Well, David did. The whole idea came from he wanted to be a breakfast DJ without any of the real responsibility, basically. So that's why we do it every morning. And he decided it'd be funny to call it Chattervix. And then the reality of having to say, what's your podcast? Like,
it dawned on you.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah, it's feel like a prat, basically. That's his fault.
Talking over food, I have to ask you. So obviously you won your round of Bake Off.
Yeah. Yes, I did. Thank you for bringing it up.
Gherkins?
Love gherkins.
Are they really a big thing in your life?
I do love a gherkin, yeah. Yeah, this is like...
40 a day sometimes? Is that basically clearing a whole jar?
I haven't cleared a whole jar. Because I have someone in my life to tell me to stop, I think. That's the difference.
You're still married?
I am still... I repeat, I am still... I know it's hard to believe people that use Google, which sadly is everyone. Mm. I am still married. I love doing Bake Off. I met some really lovely people. I loved Jeremy Paxman. He's a pantomime villain. He's a really lovely man.
Did you really practice in advance?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Was that out of competition or not wanting to look a dick on screen or what?
Well, there was two things. I thought everyone would do that. And secondly, I thought it would go against sort of type a bit.
If you could do it?
If I could do it, yeah. And then I found out everyone else hadn't done anything. So people kind of, not to burst anyone's bubble, but it was more about them having not done anything than my skill, if I'm honest.
Your final winning signature showstopper was a chocolate orange cake modelled on your own arse.
Yeah.
And you complained about never having won Rear of the Year.
Yeah.
But I think, actually, it's another competition that you haven't won. Another poll. I'm slightly embarrassed about it because I have.
You've won Rear of the
Year? No. Oh. I've won Beard of the Year.
Oh, have you?
And I'm ashamed.
Sorry, I swore. I'm so
no,
sorry.
It's fine. It's a podcast.
Right.
Well, anybody who's listened to...
I lost my temper there. I'm sorry.
It's kind of... I have told this story before, I think, on Out to Lunch, but I'm going to quickly tell it again. So Beard of the Year is run by the self-styled leader of the Beard Liberation Front, Keith Flett, a regular correspondent to The Guardian. And he's old school, paints himself, old school, so Beard of the Year, he's got a big beard.
Right.
And he'd run it for a number of years. And I noticed, I think it was like 2010, 2011, coming up to Christmas, between Christmas and New Year, he'd gone to Twitter with it and that the shortlist was me.
Okay.
Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and Brian Blessed. Now,
No chance. You're out of your depth.
Except, mate, in those days, the Church of England hadn't got its Twitter social media.
But they're kicking themselves now, aren't they?
In place, and nor had Brian Blessed, although Brian Blessed would later become quite a figure on Twitter. And I was doing all right on Twitter in those early days. I had a mighty 25,000.
So you took a sideways in.
And I suddenly said to my Twitter following, this is being voted for online, vote for me.
Wow.
And I took it.
God, took some big boys down there.
I took some serious beers. Wow. And I actually am quite ashamed to sit in front of you.
Well, mine's just literally... I stood in the garden 2 days ago while my other half trimmed my beard down. She takes me out into the garden, and our house is quite overlooked. I have to take my top off, which I'm not happy about, and my beard is cut in the middle of the lawn, and she trims it down. She's pretty good at it, to be honest. She's been doing it for 15 plus years now. She trims it down until she's happy with the length it is, and then I grow it again.
And does the Met Office have to report beard cuttings floating across the beach in Brighton?
Well, they do.
The outlook is for showers with outbreaks of Joe Wilkinson beard tumbleweed.
Sadly, yeah.
Well, I have to say, it's in fine fettle today.
Thank you.
We can have a look at the dessert menu, but for now, I'm going to say, Joe Wilkinson, thank you very much for letting me take you out to lunch.
Thank you for having me. I've loved it. Excellent. What a lovely time. Thank you very much.
Is it better than Chattervix first thing in the morning?
Do you know what? I'm doing this every day, I think.
Good call. So what do you think about Joe and me creating a spin-off daily Out to Lunch? We could, I don't know, call it Out for Pack Lunch and wander through train stations getting sausage roll crumbs down our fronts. Delicious. While you ponder that, give us a follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please do share this with everybody you know and a few people you don't. Also, do comment and give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. It helps us to continue making more of the episodes you love. Out to Lunch is a Something Else and Jay Rayner production. The music was written, arranged and performed by me, Jay Rayner, and Robert Reckenberg. The recording engineer was Gulliver Tickle and the mix engineer was Jay Beale. The producer of this episode was Bethany Hocken. The senior producer is Selena Ream and the executive producer is Ollie Wilson. Next time, I'll be attempting to prize the juiciest of stories from journalist and author Marina Hyde.
We'd ring Archie Hamilton and say, they found this amazing chimp in, you know, in some zoo in some whatever that can communicate. We'd love you to sit an intelligence test against this chimp. Would you be... And it was only after a while that he suddenly realised what was happening.